Welcome to episode 94 of the Robot Report podcast, which brings conversations with robotics innovators straight to you. I'm Mike Weitzman, founder of the Mobile Robot Guide and editor for the Robot Report. Thanks as always for tuning in. You can find us on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe, leave us a rating, and give us a review. I'm solo this week as Steve Crow is traveling, but on the podcast today, we interview Victor DeRolfi, CEO and founder of RoboTire, where we learn all about the development of the robotic tire changing solution. Before we get to the news, I want to let you know that final details are set now for this upcoming RoboBusiness and Field Robotics Engineering Forum, which now is about 4 weeks away. We've got 100 plus exhibitors, 60 plus speakers, a career fair, the Pitchfire Robotics Startup Competition, a startup workshop, and plenty of networking opportunities. So if you're thinking about coming, again, the dates are October 19th to 20th. Takes place in Santa Clara at the Santa Clara Convention Center. And to register, go to robobusiness.com for all the details. Now let's take a look at some of the news stories from this last week. Earlier this week, ABB announced that the AST rebranding is done. ABB launched its first range of rebranded autonomous mobile robots following the acquisition of mobile robotic leader ASTI Mobile Robotics in 2021 for $190 million. Mobile Robotic Solutions are now fully rebranded and integrated into ABB's portfolio, and they've grouped this under a new product name, which they call Flexly. And I think this is attempting to indicate the flexibility of operations that the AMRs offer. And the interesting thing when you take a look at ABB's portfolio, of course, ABB has a full range of industrial robots, collaborative robots, industrial controls. So the acquisition of ASTI Mobile Robots really rounded out the ABB portfolio. And now what you see ABB doing is taking that integration to the deepest levels of the ability for the industrial robots and the mobile robot solutions to work together, to pick and place items off of the mobile robots with the industrial robots. And now the systems are completely branded with the ABB logo. The first rebranded models to be released, the Flexly Tug and the Flexly Mover, cover applications that include towing and trolley transportation up to about 2,000 kilograms. As well as lifting and transporting racks, containers, and pallets up to about 1,500 kilograms. I'll put a link to this story in the show notes. Also this week, the Gripper Company, a Danish company, officially launched the MaxGrip, and the new MaxGrip Gripper uses vacuum and four soft fingers that move to help solve the problems that robot grippers have with handling items in a warehouse picking and sorting jobs where there are a lot of different items to handle. And the unique thing, or the interesting thing about this gripper, is that the articulating vacuum gripper is used for the initial item acquisition. And then once it pulls the items up into the gripper, the fingers are deployed to stabilize the gripped item during the high-speed transfer by the robot. And this speeds up the overall pick-and-place cycle. The gripper unit is lightweight and weighs in at 3.75 to about 5.6 pounds, or about 1.4 to 2.1 kilograms, depending on the configuration. And it can carry payloads up to about 13 pounds, or about 7 kilograms. This is a new product, and we ran this story on the Robot Report, and I'll put a link to this story in the show notes as well. Another story that I ran this week on the Mobile Robot Guide is that HP has launched a new construction information printer. This is a large format printer, a mobile robot with a printer cartridge on it that can run around on a construction site and tag and lay out information for the placement of architectural elements. HP announced the new HP SitePrint, which is an autonomous robot. And SitePrint will be available to customers in North America starting through an early access program. And the company is planning for a wider commercial release of this robot in 2023. HP worked with Leica Geosystems, which is part of Hexagon, to integrate the HP SitePrint with the Leica TS16 and the Leica Icon ICR80 robotic total station to help the robot achieve precise positioning and navigation. And this is really the system that helps the system know where the robot is relative to all of the other elements on site and gives it the precision to actually print on the concrete slab where the walls go and all the other information that'll be used by the construction crew to actually build the building. The company is also working with Topcon to integrate HP SitePrint with the Topcon Layout Navigator and GT Robotic Total Stations. I'll put a link for this story in the show notes as well, but you can also find it in the news feed on the Mobile Robot Guide.
Joining us now on the podcast is the CEO and founder of RoboTire, Victor Duralfi. Victor, thanks so much for doing this. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing good, and it's a pleasure. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I know the pleasure is all ours. Again, we'll get into a little bit of the technology a little bit later on in the conversation here, but we thought it would be an interesting point just to start with how you came up with this idea, just the genesis behind RoboTire as a company.
Yeah, happy to dive in. So my background, so I'm originally from Michigan, but then moved out of Michigan to the Bay Area in 2009 timeframe. And then from there, I've been building robots from single arm to full factories for the likes of Tesla, SpaceX, Apple, Zoom Pizza, Cafe X, name it. I've made these industrial robots kind of do whatever we want them to do, which has been fun and interesting. And then it was about in probably 20, I can't remember the exact time because it feels like time to fly, but I had the fortunate event of going to go get my tire changed. So my wife needed it. A lot of people can understand this pain point. Mm-hmm. If you go take it to an auto shop and you had to sit there. I sat there for 3 hours and thought, hey, there had to be something better, you know, from a high level perspective. We use robots to put tires on the car. So why can't we put tires on the service center? So that was kind of the genesis behind RoboTire was feeling the same pain point that every single customer feels every day.
Hmm. So the robots, as you said, in the factory on the line, robots are being used to put tires on. You thought, why couldn't we put this in the service center? So talk to us a little bit about the process that you designed the robot for and what it does then in terms of in the service center interacting with the service technicians to handle the tires.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, you think about a tire change and same when I started this, tire changes, it's easy, right? Robots do it at the factory. It's a lot harder when we actually got into it, but that's normally how it is. The robots here, and a lot of what we're trying to do is we're trying to make the most sophisticated tool that a shop has, right? Because, you know, in a tire changing process, if you're familiar with it, you got to take the lug nuts off, take the tire off, take the old rubber off, put the new rubber on, balance it, put it back on, and torque to the lug nuts back down. So high level, simple steps. Now, there's a lot of variation and nuances that come to it. So, you know, RoboTire isn't here to, you know, fully replace the technician because at some point you need someone to come in because we don't want the robot to damage the vehicle or break a stud off or, you know, especially if us that live in the northern states when we have rust, which is salt, right? You really don't want the robot to be pulling vehicles off the lift. So there's these checkpoints. So, you know, we say that these robots are collaborative with the technician. Now, in no way is this a cobot in any manner from a safety perspective. We like to be clear, but, you know, we've developed processes in to have the robots pause for operators to do certain steps and or, you know, identify like, hey, I lost a lug nut. So the robot will stay right and point at where it was. So how to make it collaborative with the technician to work with the robot system.
So what part of it? I'm just watching the video and we'll make sure that we link to this video in the show notes of the podcast. Can you dive a little bit more into how specifically a human collaborates with the system? Is it, presenting a part or a tire or presenting something to the end effector of the robot? How specifically are mechanics interacting with the robot?
Yeah, so we've taken a lot of the heavy lifting of the tire changing process out. So basically the way the system works is the vehicle's pulled to the system. We scan the VIN number of the system. That way we can ingest the information about the vehicle. So you also have to remember at a factory, they're doing a bunch of batches of the same vehicle over and over again. I have to be able to do a Prius, then a Tesla, then an F-150. Oh, by the way, I need this model of an F-150, which is a different parameters when it comes to wheelbase size, rim diameter, et cetera, et cetera. So basically, we scan the vehicle into the system. We ingest all of the information that we think of the vehicle. The technician then pulls the vehicle in. And then at that point, the technician still has to get out and put the lifting block to lift the vehicle. That's not automated yet, but there is concepts out in our heads about automating that down the road. And then once the operator places the lifting blocks accordingly, we instruct the operator to lift the vehicle. Once the vehicle is at the appropriate height, then they hit go, and then the robots then start. And at that point, we then utilize vision to identify the lug nut, the tire size, and all of our robots are guided by vision. So if you're familiar with robotics, every operation we do is like bin picking at that level of difficulty, right? Because people always talk about bin picking, but now you got to be able to handle black on black. So black lug nuts with black rims, shiny lug nuts, whatever. Again, now we start getting into these nuances of how complex the problem gets. So our robots go find the lug nuts. We do other visioning processes to identify other aspects of the tire. And then we go and start the removal of the lug nuts. We remove the lug nuts, operate. Then once we have a mechanism that comes up that holds the tire, so prevents the tire from falling off. Once you remove all the lug nuts or lug studs, if you're a European car, then we go and grab the tire. And then depending on what process we have, we either will drop the tire on the ground and we let the technician grab it and then wheel it over to the demounting and mounting process. And then from there, what we then do is we have a separate process where we integrate a third party, they're called Hunter Engineering, that makes a tire changer and balancer, and we automate the actual placement of the tire on there, the removal of the tire off of that system. So then at that point, this is when a technician comes in. So the technician will be there to support the demounting and mounting of the tire, inflating and deflating of the tire, and then putting the wheel weights on. So of that whole process, that after they lift the vehicle, it's all automated. And then once the tires are either A, presented by the operator into the cell, if that's the motion you want, or you hit complete on the other side, robots will pick the tire up, put the tire back on, torque to OEM, torque specs, and all of that. So we do set up for about 25 minutes. The operators probably used maybe 3 to 4 minutes of that whole process.
And actually looking at the video, there's more than one robot here, right? So you've got a multi-robot system on rails that the robots can move themselves from front to rear of the vehicle. Talk a little bit about the configuration of the robots around the tire changing station.
So you're looking at Gen 1 video. I will send you a Gen 3 video that will make it a lot easier. But again, this is that video you're watching is actually installed at a tire shop in San Carlos in the Bay Area. That was our Gen 1. The latest configuration, we've actually removed the smaller robots that are on rails. So we built that, the wrench is now built into the end of arm tool. So you have one larger bot that can span all the wheelbases from a Prius all the way up to a Sprinter van. So basically we use two Kawasaki robots on either side. So there's still a robot per side. And then they just basically can reach and then remove So it kind of follows that same process. So if you're watching that video, instead of that little robot using vision to find the lug nuts and then storing it on a storage device, the big robot does the same thing, which you go find it, uses the same type of wrench, goes and removes it, puts it into a storage device, and then goes and grabs the tire afterwards.
All with a single end effector. It doesn't have to change end effectors to then also grab the tire.
Correct. So, it's all built into one end effector right now. A lot of that was to, how do you handle variability again? You know, is it a, you know, 4-bolt pattern, 5-bolt pattern, 6-bolt pattern? Is it a 26 inch tire all the way up to a 32 inch tire? So, or 36, whatever. So we got to be able to handle a lot of variability from that side.
You mentioned in one of your answers about the safety aspect and the collaborating with humans that, in fact, the system does not use a collaborative robot, that it is a traditional old school industrial robot. Again, the video that we have, it looks like it's a Mitsubishi industrial arm, I think is what we're looking at. But why didn't you go with a cobot? Is it a weight problem, a payload capacity issue, a speed issue, or both?
I have my own views on a cobot, just in general from the industry. And I, in this chat, I know we're on the call, but I just locked you guys a new video link to watch. But we went with the industrial robot because of payload. So, you know, a tire could weigh as light as 30 pounds, as heavy as 100 pounds. So they don't make cobots that have that big of a capability. And in general, again, this is a side conversation from RoboTire, but, you know, a cobot is safe. However, your end of arm tool, just because it's a cobot, isn't, unless you guard against it, isn't safe, right? I can, you've seen those videos, you guys probably have a knife on the end of a UR robot and people asking if it's safe, right? So, you know, but we've done, we've taken a very streamlined approach. It, you know, we have three different types of safety sensors, to your very standard light curtains and area scanners, to radar to do that, and then to motion tracking of operators. So we kind of bombarded this cell with safety and safety devices so that, and then we've taken very strategic decisions with our processes to put in pauses where we could allow the operator to come into the cell and then work on the car and then not. So safety is one of our biggest aspects, because we're in a shop. You know, if you think about this, there's not very many robotics companies that are actually putting like a consumer facing product out where consumers can see it. So, you know, you can walk into a garage and see this, and you're about, you know, 5 feet away from that robot moving, which, you know, it's scary to some people. And then other people, they're, everyone's in, you know, enthralled about it. So safety is one of our highest priorities, both from a technician and operator, but then from a vehicle, because, you know, in the end, I'm working on a vehicle that you drive every day. So I have to make sure it's safe, because that's, you know, it's different than a robot making my phone.
And so how do you sensing people in and around the robot so that, you know, when they're in the workspace and you can potentially stop the robot or prevent a motion that might, you know, it also, I imagine people keeping hands out of the way, trying to grab stuff and, you know, interact with the robot at pinch points and those type of things.
Yeah. So we have safety walls built in, and then we got those area scanners and then radar scanners to be able to see through things. And then, you know, motion tracking to sense when the operator's coming in and when an operator has left. So there's all that triple confirmation from that. So it's very complex from that side. And, you know, a lot of it, you got to think about it in, you know, like a normal auto shop, you have a bay here and a bay right next to each other. So, it's a complex equation that we had to solve.
So the footprint of this tire changing system has to fit into a normal work bay. You don't get any more space just because there's robots necessarily in this system?
We are a little bigger. We're about a bay and a half. So in most cases, you have to give up two bays, depending on your layout, right? But if you're familiar with the industry, it's equivalent to the same space an alignment rack takes up. So they're used to bigger format stuff coming in. You know, but the real pitch, and there'll be debate on this, is, you know, right now there's such a demand for a workforce, right? There's not a lot of mechanics. When was the last time we actually had auto shop in high schools, right? We've ripped a lot of that out. So we're not bringing that vocational work back in to the industry to kind of backfill technicians. You know, depending on what report you read, you could be short 30 to 50,000 technicians. And that is only growing because it's, you know, the tire job is the entry level job that comes in. They get paid the lowest, but you have to kind of like, you know, do your dues to get to a master level mechanic. It has the highest turnover and the highest injury rate. So, you know, that's, again, when we talk about safety for the technicians, that's what we're trying to prevent: back problems, knees problems, and all of that. You know, yes, it'd be great if we're fast and can get the vehicle out, but really, you know, this is built more to assist with throughput and prevent injuries that exist, which is what robots were always meant for, right? Mm-hmm. That mundane, monotonous, labor-intensive job getting replaced.
What's been the reaction early on here from some mechanics who maybe, whether the system is installed there and they're being trained on how to safely work with the system, or if they're seeing it for the first time, or maybe you're pitching it to a tire shop and their employees just hear about it for the first time? You know, again, from my perspective, I think of the auto industry in robotics. It's a lot of robots have been used in the auto industry forever to manufacture the robots, right, on the lines there. This is really, I think, to your point, the first time, not even just in auto, but in many industries, where somebody can walk in and just see robots doing useful work and it's there. What's just the general reaction been from people?
Well, as you guys noticed, it was a highly commented piece, so it's very polarizing. You know, you have both people on either side of the spectrum, which is robots are taking my jobs away. This is not faster. I can do a set of four tires in under 4 minutes versus, you know, people thinking this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. So, you know, again, we're still an early startup. We still get a fair amount of shops that are saying, this isn't for me. You know, this won't work with my business. Or we have, you know, other customers that are trying to think ahead and what does the industry look like, especially with the adoption of electric vehicles. So what repair tasks are still left and how do they kind of position themselves for the changing of it? You know, the nice thing is at least from all the installs we've done to date and technicians we've brought, technicians rave about our system. And a lot of that is because, you know, they understand the hard part of the tire changing job is actually getting in there, bending over, trying to pull that tire off and all of that. So us removing that has, you know, made lives a lot easier. And, you know, I think when I think big picture of this, you know, how do we kind of change the persona of what a tire technician is, right? So now, even though, yes, you have to understand the tire changing process, now you can be a robot technician instead of a tire technician. And it kind of helps change the, and again, I'll probably get a lot of comments on that, but I'm well aware of that, but change the, you know, the MO or the breed of technicians, right? How do we get more people in? How do we get, you know, and adapt to cars now being smarter? So now we got to service them a different way. And hopefully RoboTire can help facilitate some of those interesting conversation and growth in the industry.
Yeah, you know, well, I told this story, I think when we shared the RoboTire install on social media, somebody made a comment and I just shared my own personal story, which I think is probably pervasive around the country for sure. Is I live in a small town, Western Massachusetts. There's two auto body mechanics in town that have been here for generations, right? Passed down through their families. And we just happened to go to one of them just by chance. You know, maybe they answered the phone first 8 years ago. And that's sort of where we've gone ever since for the last 7 years, right? Anytime we needed new tires, we needed an inspection, we needed an oil change, whatever we needed, that's where we went. Our kids, we both have, both families have multiple kids kind of around the same age. So we often see them in town. They do great work. So we just kept going there. We were very happy. And then something happened sort of maybe a year or two ago where you literally cannot get them to answer the phone anymore because they are so busy. So what happened is we took our business to the other mechanic, right? Just because they answer the damn phone and they're still scheduling 1 to 2 weeks out. But the response from the mechanic that we left was that we're just so busy, we can't find additional help to help us out. And that's what I always come back to is just a system like this would just probably help them out immensely, where whether it's retaining people so that they're not constantly having to train these entry level mechanics to change the tires, right? Maybe they just automate that and put those people, train them for other things. Or if they're having to pull their more experienced mechanics to change tires because they can't keep those entry level people happy. It just seems like it's that workforce issue is not going to improve anytime soon, right?
Correct. You hit every single value prop on the head, right? From an auto shop perspective, what the owners are looking at, right, is they have long wait times and they don't have techs. So since they don't have techs, they just have a lot of unutilized bays. So if you have two unutilized bays, you can bring RoboTire in and get the old throughput you had with the same technicians you do now. And that's why we haven't had a lot of pushback of, oh, this won't fit or that. It's just because a lot of places just have unutilized floor space. Put RoboTire in, do exactly everything you just mentioned to help. And you know, the way I can't get into pricing, but what I can tell you is, like, you know, we do RoboTire on a subscription model. So, you know, I don't want this to be just a system that a discount tire can own, right? We have single mom and pop shops that, you know, we sell to, they're in our backlog of customers, because I want this to be kind of available for the masses and not just to the big boys, because that's probably the question you guys get a lot is, what, you know, this is a huge price ticket, right? Mm-hmm. We think about the size and all that. And so we kind of switched a little bit to a subscription model that allows, you know, the shop to, you know, we, depending on tire volume, now there's a big swing there. You know, shops could see an ROI in year one. Shops can see it in 3 years. You know, we've had people that have penciled out a 300% ROI and can see profits month one. So a lot goes in there, right? Labor rates, volume, and all of that. But it's been interesting to see the wide spectrum of customers that we have.
So how did the relationship with Discount Tire come to be? And obviously they're an investor now. So they're, as an investor, I assume they're getting early solutions, helping you develop the system and the workflow, right? So tell us a little bit about that relationship. And obviously it's not exclusive then. You're allowed to sell the solution to other providers, including competitors for Discount Tire in the future, whether that's another tire chain.
Yes. So again, like I said earlier, like the way we've kind of approached this is we found our first customer, mm-hmm. and then worked hand in hand with the customer to develop the system. So our first one was Tool Garage, and they provided a lot of input and all that. Then Discount came in once our system was working in California, and you know, they see value in it. I don't know what all of their reasons are, but you know, they wanted to help and, you know, push this technology through. So they came in as an investor. They led our Series A round last year. Then, you know, we took the next steps to deploy a system for them. So they're an investor and a customer. Mm-hmm. So they bought systems, and, you know, we then went and, you know, they have a very process you have to follow for deploying equipment, which I would assume every big enterprise level you know, company has. So, you know, we then deployed Gen 2 with them, spent a long time in their lab developing, pushing the product to its limits, understanding its limitations, which is all good for the industry. And then, as you guys wrote about, we deployed our first Gen 3, which is the system that we feel is ready to deploy to the masses. Because we've kind of worked out enough bugs and tweaks. So Discount has been and extremely helpful, both from an investor side, but from a customer side to, you know, help develop the product. Because like I said, there's a lot of nuances, and, you know, us being relatively new, we don't know everything we need to know about tire changing. And, you know, a customer like Discount that is, you know, willing to provide feedback and direction of like, we've seen this before, so do this type of stuff, you know, has been very beneficial for us from a growth perspective of learning, like not having to really truly stumble. I mean, we stumbled, but, you know, kind of giving a Northern Light type of guidance.
Obviously, the security aspects of this system is very important, as we talked a lot about before, but can you give us something else? Like, besides that, what's been the most difficult or most important part of the work cell design?
Oh, difficult part is trying to make a large 200 kg robot hold to plus or minus a half a mil in accuracy. I'm not going to say repeatability, because, you know, right, every robot manufacturer is going to come and say, we're repeatable. Accuracy is a different aspect. So, you know, again, don't mind get into the weeds, but there are certain wheel combinations by OEM that are very difficult to place the tire back on. Right. So being able to do that without, you know, damaging, even though the studs are made because people can't really lift the tire, right, to kind of like scrape them off a little bit. But we're trying not to do that. So there's definitely wheel and lug nut combinations that are a lot tighter than some other ones. So that variability. And then the biggest issue, which I think every robot with vision can say, is lighting, right? You got to remember that we are not in a factory anymore. We're in a service center that we have to deal with, you know, natural lighting.
Ambient light coming in from the door bays at different times of the day and weather and all that sort of stuff, right?
How are you dealing? What can you tell us about what you're using for vision? I mean, in overcoming some of those challenges.
So vision, again, what we have a few great camera providers out there. What I can say is we're not using the old guards and robotic cameras. I can tell you that much. But, you know, we basically have to make a 2D and 3D map of the tire, and, you know, with different filters and combinations to then we put our own machine learning model on top of it. We constantly are updating our machine learning model based on images we get from the real world to provide better robot guidance. And then, you know, high level, if you need to block the sun, you got to block the sun. So whether that be a shade or a screen, like, simple ways kind of help solve very complex problems. So, and, you know, again, we're still learning, because it depends on, you know, the seasons. It also depends on the location of the store. Like, are the bays facing north, south? Are they facing east, west? And all of each kind of install is a little unique from that perspective.
Yeah. And I imagine, you know, it's one thing to have a database with the stock location, stock tire designs off the factory floor, and then you've got all the aftermarket products that people can put on their vehicles, you know, from mag wheels to my son put extenders on his hubs on his truck to push the wheels out 6 inches on each side, right, to get a wider wheelbase on his truck. So you've got all of those sort of variables to deal with on any given customer vehicle, which just complicates the whole vision guidance, but also makes vision critical for, you know, those variable pieces. And you can't just rely on necessarily a CAD drawing of a stock wheel or guiding the robot necessarily, right?
Yep. And again, that's besides the other two issues, I say, like, the thing with this is being able to handle that variability, not even from a OEM spec variability, but to the aftermarket side of it. Now, there is some stuff that we just can't do, like the long pointed stud, right, that people put on trucks. We're not doing those because being able to handle that variability and make the robot repeatable, reliable, and safe and fast, right? That's why I said the process is a lot more challenging than when an outsider kind of just first looks at this, of being like, you have to tackle all of this and not just be like, oh, just take the bolt off and put the bolt back on, right?
No, and this is, oh, go ahead, Mike.
I was just going to say, and do it in 2 seconds like an F1 team, right? Yeah.
Correct.
So this next question is probably way too early, and we're getting way ahead of ourselves as you guys are really new to this, and you're focusing on obviously getting the RoboTire tire changing solution out there. But in your discussions with Discount Tire and some other customers and all of these early learnings that you've happened upon, are there other applications within the auto service industry where robots can play a major role?
Yeah. And again, the way I look at this is RoboTire is a platform for vehicle maintenance. It's not just tires. I mean, we chose tires because they're consumable and they're unfazed by the changing of the vehicle type going over to electric. Now, when you look at where the market's going, what services are going to be left and or still remaining, you know, there's everything from brakes to suspension to cleaning to, you know, software updates to charging of EV vehicles. So there's a lot on our radar. I can't really disclose everything that we're looking at. But again, the best way to think about this is a platform for vehicle maintenance. And then, you know, high level, depending on your opinion, right? Whenever autonomous vehicles come to fruition, how do you service an autonomous vehicle, right? How does one robot service another robot?
So there's going to be a mobile RoboTire truck moving down the highway when my autonomous vehicle gets a flat tire. That's what you're saying.
I can't confirm or deny the format that a RoboTire system will be in the future, but your mind could kind of wander on where we can take RoboTire.
Yeah, it's very interesting market segment that you're opening up here, this whole idea that enabling, you know, automation in the repair and maintenance, because again, that's just going to continue to be a requirement and need going forward.
Yeah, and what I would say is we are also thinking past cars. So we have other customers, you know, that have wheeled vehicles or wheeled apparatuses that experience the same problems, right? And you know, so it'll be very interesting to see some of the other forms RoboTire takes. And you know, we're all about, you know, solving those pain points that everyone has.
How long does it take to install one of your systems?
It takes about 2 days. So you know, RoboTire being a small company, but, you know, the biggest thing that I wanted to do is, you know, bring manufacturing back to the U.S., right? So we currently have about a 100,000 square foot manufacturing facility here in Plymouth, Michigan. We have our own dedicated welders and machinists and all of that. And, you know, it's been a blessing in disguise to have that capability at our fingerprint to, one, rapidly prototype concepts and other aspects, and then also, two, to be able to scale up and deliver systems.
Well, this has been a great conversation. Any final thoughts for folks who are listening? Or are you guys hiring? What should they expect to see from you guys in the near future? Where can they learn more?
Yeah, we are hiring. Like I said, we're in our growth period. Hopefully, if everything goes well, you'll be seeing about 50 of these RoboTire systems across the U.S. next year alone. So we're growing. We're hiring all fields. Either two ways you could reach us or find us on LinkedIn or all of our social media. You can email at info@RoboTire to get information about us. And again, I think the last thing that I'd like to harp on, because it's always brought up, is, you know, we're not here to take jobs away. It's an augmentation of your workforce and to make the most sophisticated tool our shop has. So I'll leave with that.
No, you're going to have to hammer that home point a lot. So good practice for you to keep reminding people that's what your mission is to help out, right? Where this labor shortage, again, is not going to improve anytime soon going forward. So thank you so much, Victor Duralfi, CEO and founder of RoboTire. Best of luck going forward, man.
All right. Thank you.
I want to thank Victor DeRolfi, CEO and founder of Robotire, for joining us on the show today. Hope you found that an interesting conversation about the type of application and considerations that Robotire had to make to automate, you know, this process of changing tires at your local tire store. We look forward to following them and ideally, you know, seeing one of these in the corner store soon. One more reminder to check out the RoboBusiness and Field Robotics Engineering Forum coming up next month on October 19th and 20th in Santa Clara, California. And don't forget about the Robotics Career Fair, whether you've got jobs that you're looking to fill or whether you're looking for your next gig, a great place to network. There'll be the startup workshop if you're a young company. Mass Robotics is running that workshop. There's the pitch fire, which still has some openings if you'd like to pitch your young organization to a group of venture capitalists, get the word out about your organization and your opportunity, along with all the other great content that we've lined up for you. Go to robobusiness.com for complete details, and I hope to see you there. That's going to do it for episode 94 of the Robot Report podcast. Thanks again to everyone for tuning in. New episodes of the Robot Report podcast drop each week. We're available on your favorite podcast app. And please do me a favor. Share an episode of the Robot Report podcast with a friend or coworker. That would really help us out. So on behalf of Steve Crow and the rest of the crew, I'm Mike Weitzman. We'll talk to you all next week.